Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning. And today my guest is Jean Doe Massoero, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. I probably have that pronounced incorrectly. He's been a teacher for quite some time, and he has a long-standing interest in the connections between the Delsarte method and the Alexander technique. Jean Doe, welcome to the show.
Yeah. Hello.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Perfect.
Great. Could you begin by telling our listeners a little about your interest in the Delsarte and the Delsarte method, and why, and what the connections are between Delsarte and Alexander, the historical connections?
Yeah, I can do that. Well, to understand my interest in the Delsarte system, you have to know that I'm a student of Alexander's books. I translated the four books when I was in school in England, when I trained as an Alexander teacher. And my interest in the books has always been fired by one question. And that question is very simple. How did he do it? What I mean by that is we know that Alexander had faulty sensory appreciation. We know that he had multiple habits, bad habits, and of use. And then one day he decided to change, and he was able to do so. Well, that's what the myth says. Mm-hmm. So when I translated Alexander, I was, in fact, looking for clues as the method, what was the system to bypass faulty sensory appreciation without, any help. Mm-hmm. So I had to study the beginning of the Alexander technique. And when one day reading article and lecture, a very good book by Jean Fisher, I found out that Alexander, when he started to teach the Delsarte system. Mm-hmm. This is on his business card.
Mm-hmm. And it's reproduced in that book.
Yeah. And so I started to, inquire into the Delsarte system. And I was not very successful at first because the history of the Delsarte system is in itself quite interesting. Delsarte was a Frenchman. He was a teacher of voice, and he, in fact, created, in order to solve voice's problem, he created what he called a gestural training system. He found out that you couldn't cure the voice directly. You couldn't, in fact, go for the vocal apparatus and make changes because this apparatus is dependent on the rest of the body. So there was, of course, a link between the two techniques. It's very clear. But what happened is that Mr. Delsarte, called François Delsarte, was born in 1811. And was died in 1871. This man didn't leave any written books. In fact, he didn't publish. Mm. So all I could find of Delsarte for quite a long time was only books by his followers. And he had so many followers that you can imagine that the original ideas have been transformed and diluted a lot. So there are two kinds of information you can find nowadays on the Delsarte system. One is called the Delsartism, or sometimes I call it the Delsarte mania. Because at the end of the 18th century, beginning of the 19th century, everybody in the world was interested in this gestural training. And so Delsartism is very far away from the Alexander technique. It's quite clear that, for example, Walter Carrington, I remember in an interview with Sean Curry, says that, well, of course, Alexander had some knowledge of Del Sar, but it's not very interesting. It's a very crude method. Well, he was talking about Del Sartism. And we know that by now because in 2009, a French gentleman, as an academic, has published the original manuscripts from Del Sartre. Because if Del Sartre never published anything, he wrote extensively on his method, on his pedagogy, mm-hmm. on everything. So one day I discovered the manuscripts of Del Sartre, and suddenly, wow, it was like... It was like thunder and storms. Suddenly, I could find a profound link between the two techniques. And more than that, I could find a lot of information that could, in fact, fill the holes that Alexander had left in his books. Suddenly, everything started to make sense. I started to have an idea, a very much clearer idea of what was what I call the initial Alexander technique, because I consider that there are two Alexander techniques. One that Alexander used for himself from 1893 till around 1915, mm-hmm. and another one that started after 1915, and what I call the modern Alexander technique. And when I say that I study the books, I've been studying the different revision that Alexander has made in his own books. For example, when you read Man's Supreme Inheritance, you read the 1946 edition. It's the fifth revision. So Alexander didn't write a book and publish it. No, he wrote a book, then rewrote it, then changed it some more. And in the end, what you get is like a mix of the two opposing theories, really. So that's why it was so important for me to discover the link between Alexander and the original Del Sartre system. You have to make very clear that I will not be talking about Del Sartism. The books that what we call the cookbooks, when the Del Sartre system was really in fact exported to the U.S., to the United States of America, and people there made it out so famous, but in a way they dismantled the original idea that was quite complex and involved. So that's my interest in it.
Right. So, and you, as part of your research, you discovered what I would consider a very amazing, improbable connection between Alexander and Del Sartre's, I believe, younger brother, or yeah. possible connection.
It's a possible connection, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, because at first... well, I couldn't understand how two people living so far away from one another, because I'm sure that Del Sartre never left France, and in fact, Alexander didn't speak French, he didn't went near any French people, so it was impossible. It was like a mystery. I said, well, like an enormous coincidence. How could it be that these two people could write about theories that were so new at without knowing each other? So it didn't make any sense. It was like an amazing coincidence. But then, yes, I found a possible connection. Mr. Del Sarte was a teacher in the Royal College of Music in Paris for nearly 35 years. He had many, many students. And one of these students is very interesting. It's his own brother. because everybody knows that Delsarte had a brother we call Auguste Delsarte, because he's been interviewed by a few American people, and he's given lessons in the States, so everybody knows about Gustave Delsarte. But he had another brother, a younger one, called Camille Delsarte. And this one did the Delsarte system training in the Royal College in France, but then he disappeared. He disappeared. We couldn't put him anywhere until the day when I found, in fact, in Australia, an academic that told me that he had heard the name, but not Auguste. It was a Camille something. And so I started to investigate, and I found his obituary. This gentleman, Camille Delsarte, that was born in 1817 and died in 1878, in fact, immigrated and to Tasmania. It's amazing.
That is astonishing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's incredible. And so he immigrated there, and he lived for 24 years down under. And he lived in Hobart, and he taught in Hobart. He was a very, very successful teacher in Tasmania. He taught dramatic, he taught singing, he taught music, and he was very, very famous. So there is something that... exist is that Alexander's wife, his first wife, was in fact at a first marriage with a pianist called Mr. Young. And so this Mr. Young met Alexander when Alexander was 17, only 17. And he met them because they were both, he and his wife, were touring Tasmania and presenting plays, Shakespeare plays. So Alexander straight away was in love with both of them. And it's quite possible, because Miss Edith Young, later Edith Alexander, had wealthy parents. It's very, very possible, like she was living in Hobart, that she had lessons with Camille Delsarte. So that's my... I couldn't find any traces of these lessons, but it's sure that Alexander, being a Tasmanian himself, could not ignore this enormous figure at the time that was Camille Delsarte. The second link that I found is that when Alexander went to Australia, to Melbourne, in 1896, and started his first practice. First, he spent a lot of money doing what he liked, going to theater and seeing actors, and he reported himself that he saw there a very, very well-known French actress called Sarah Bernhardt. And this French actress, at the same time, is the most well-known student of François Delsarte. She was like the publicity for Delsarte around the world. And Alexander is reported that he went to every one of his plays, of her plays. So I can imagine that Melbourne was quite a great city, a big city at the time. But the people very interested in theater, in plays, were, well, a small group. And all these people may have had lesson with Camille Delsarte. So all the Delsarte people in Australia would have been in that play. So that solved the problem or mystery that that was still there for me. It's like when Alexander started his practice in Melbourne, He advertised himself as a Delsa teacher. I wondered if that was true or not, because we all know that Alexander was very good at creating a myth around himself, mm-hmm. not always telling the truth. So that was also something that I had to, well, assess. And so my idea now is very clear. It is impossible that Alexander had been a fraud on that subject, for the simple reason that Mr. Camille Delsarte had given 10 years of lesson in Australia, including Melbourne. So if Alexander was not a true Delsarte teacher, well, you know, he would have been exposed. At the time, exposing people was like a game. It went on everywhere in the state, in Australia. So Alexander was a true Delsarte teacher. And I've got proof that he was certainly the best one.
Right.
Because, yeah. Oh, yeah.
From that image in the Articles and Letters book, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was the starting point.
Yeah.
But why is he the best teacher of the Delsarte system? Well, that then is because I studied the writings of both men. And I've never encountered an author that was as good as Alexander to understand and use the Delsarte ideas. He was fantastic for that. It's incredible. I think that nowadays, if somebody is interested in the Delsarte system, in the Delsarte practice, which has completely disappeared, there is only one way. It's to really study F.M. Alexander, because he's the guy that is, in fact, has resuscitated the Delsarte system.
Wow. Well, that's a very interesting take on things. And I think that we're going to do a second podcast about some of the specific connections between Alexander's writings and teachings and Delsarte's ideas. And I know that, I know you've got some interesting ideas about that as well. But I'd like to just ask you this. It seems to me that the myth of Alexander, as you so nicely put it, generally posits that he worked more or less entirely on his own without any outside help. And I think this is a perfect example of that myth not being true. But I think just generally, it's probably useful to understand that Alexander was, while he may have been in an obscure outpost of the British Empire, he was not disconnected from other things that were going on.
Well, certainly not. May I add something? Because
sure.
It's not totally untrue that he worked on his own, because it's part of the Delsarte system that you are your own governor. You are solving your own problems. In the Delsarte system, there is nothing like the hands-on system that the modern Alexander technique is using nowadays. In the Delsarte system, you are in fact proposed a way to code the movement of the different parts of your organism. And when you understand the coding, then you are on your own in front of a few mirrors. That's the mirrors, you know. Of course, the mirrors, they come from the Delsarte system. But it doesn't mean that Alexander was working with someone else when he solved his own problems. He used the Delsarte system. I think he used the action coding system of Delsarte very well, with his mirrors that were, of course, part of the Delsarte teaching. But it's not to say that someone, in fact, produced the change in Alexander. He produced it himself. You understand that?
Yes, absolutely.
It's very important to make the difference, because otherwise you may think that Alexander didn't invent anything or didn't do anything, which is absolutely not true.
Well, would you say that what he did, and this maybe belong a little more to our second podcast, but what he did was create a way of transmitting Delsarte's ideas to other people as a teaching method?
Well, the answer is yes and no. I will explain. First of all, for the first 16 years of his teaching, he certainly did exactly what you said. He transmitted, he invented a way to transmit the Delsarte system until he discovered that there was a problem, that his pupils were not successful as he was. Then he started to resort to hands-on more and more, and as he said himself, to do the change for the pupil instead of teaching the pupil to do the change. So, yes, he did, in fact, how could I say that? Save the Delsarte system from oblivion. Because he was able, really, for the first 16 years, when it was the original Alexander technique, he was able to help people to change. And by the way, the greatest minds that were attracted to the technique were attracted before 1920, like Bernard Shaw or John Dewey. All these people were, in fact, amazed by this capacity he had to transmit through instructions only a way to completely change the direction of the use of the self, to completely change, in fact, the mind of the person that was working. After that, when Alexander started to use hands-on more and more, the Delsarte system disappeared. And it's very clear in the when you read the different revisions of his books that more and more he starts to, in fact, go for the marketing way. He's trying to sell himself, in fact, and he found that the principle of free expression had won the day. Because there is something you must understand on the position of Delsarte in the pedagogical world. When Delsarte started his system, he, in fact, was against what was called the rigid convention principle. It was the do as you're told. You were not supposed to discuss anything you learned. You were supposed to apply everything, you know. And at that moment, there was like the start, the beginning of a revolution, and it was called free expression. People started to have the idea that the ancient way of teaching was too restrictive, and that people should open themselves to feeling, to what they feel. So instead of do as you're told, people would start to think, well, it's more like I want to do as I feel like to do. And Delsarte was the first one to, in fact, refuse both ways. That is very important to understand. And he dreamed a third way, which is called the conscious guidance way. Instead of doing as you're told according to what you feel, or to do according to what you feel, he found in both situations the same problem. Human beings are not capable of using instinct, of using feelings, of using intuition. Every time, for Delsarte, this leads to very, very bad habits, very poor use. So he had this idea that it was necessary to introduce a new guidance. But it's not a guidance of the body. It's a guidance of the mind. Mm-hmm.
Did he use the word guidance and control, that phrase?
Yes.
Which
yes.
Alexander oh, yeah. pretty much.
Very much so.
Yeah. Wow. What I think would be really a good idea would be maybe to bring this conversation to an end and start a new one for a second interview, because I think we've covered the historical connections, and I think it might be good to have a second interview where we talk about a little more what you've just been talking about and some of the other connections between Alexander's writings and teachings and Del Sartre, some differences, some parallels. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
So I'm going to end, we'll end this one. My guest today has been Jondo Massoero, an Alexander Technique teacher in Montpellier, France. That's in the south of France. And this is the first of what I believe will be a two-part series on Del Sartre and Alexander. Jondo, thank you so much for being on the show.